Welcome to the Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Yes, sir, the Grill Room doors are open, and this week there's reasons for plenty of excitement. So before we get started, we'd like to welcome our newest partners, Golf Week, the game's leading insider publication. In the Grill Room, we focus on the inside story, and so does Golf Week, where they take you inside the ropes. We're proud to have Golf Week as our newest partner, and you'll find us on the homepage of golfweek.com. And somebody that's huge with Golf Week does a great job for them. Alex, you have to be awfully proud. I mean, you write great stuff in Golf Week, and now they're one of our partners for the Grill Room. Exciting news.
Well, yeah, I mean, the magazine does a very good job of covering golf globally, not just professional golf, but amateur golf and college golf. There's so much the magazine does that, you know, it seemed like a good partnership. And I have to say that if I write anything great, it's only because the editors have made it great.
Well, we know that. I mean, but you do have the uncanny ability of, I think the editor, Jeff Babineau, when he gives you an assignment, he said, I tell Alex to do a story on something. He's like a bulldog. He just goes after it. And as a result, in all honesty, you do come up with facts and figures that you know, require a lot of hard work, but you do get it done.
Well, you know, I don't know why that is, but I was lucky to kind of hook on with them a while ago now, and it's been great. It's a great relationship, and, you know, if you cover golf, you want to cover for a good publication, and Golf Week is that.
And certainly we're very proud to have Golf Week now as our partner. So let's move right along because we got so much to talk about. When we come back, it's going to be our hot topic presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And the question we have for our listeners this week, should Tiger be on the Ryder Cup team if he doesn't make it on points? We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Hot topic, we're talking about hot topic, you see.
Okay, we're back, and as I said before we went to break, the question is, should Tiger be on the Ryder Cup team if he doesn't make it on points? What about Phil, with both playing this week at the WGC Bridgestone Invitational? Certainly we should get a better indication of where their game is at. I mean, Tiger has completely dominated, basically owned Firestone. He's won there 8 times. The big question, I would guess, Alex, what happens if he doesn't perform well there?
Well, I think, first of all, Jack Nicklaus was out this week talking about that he'd have Tiger on his team, and he said he felt Tom Watson probably felt the same way. And the answer is Tom Watson, I think, does feel the same way. And has Tiger shown you enough to think that between now and, let's say, 60, 45, 50 days, whatever it is from now, that he's going to be ready to play in the Ryder Cup team for the United States? Now, I think he absolutely has shown you enough, And then secondly, I think you have to look at it the other way. If Tiger hasn't shown you enough, or you're questionable about Tiger, who do you then take?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, we've already heard from some of the newer members of the team, Ricky Fowler in particular. He says he wants Tiger on the team. When we look at, you know, the collection of potential Ryder Cup players, it's not finalized yet. We see a lot of youth. We see a lot of inexperience. So having somebody like Tiger and like Phil would be huge as far as the experience portion of playing on a Ryder Cup team.
Well, I think you have to look at, if you look at the current nine that we have, because Furyk locked himself up last week for sure, if he didn't lock himself up at the Open Championship. So you got Bubba Watson, Jimmy Walker, Ricky Fowler, Jim Furyk, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Matt Kuchar. Those are the top. Those are the top ones that are definitely locked in. There's no way they're going to fall out with the 2 weeks left to go. The only two guys that are kind of on the bubble right now are Jason Duffner and Zach Johnson. So if they stay in, that's the nine, and then obviously Watson has three to pick after Deutsche Bank on that Tuesday. Tiger and Phil seem naturals. There's no question. I mean, Phil's even a bigger lock than Tiger, I would think. So those two are done. So if not those two, your next group is Patrick Reed, Brendan Todd, Chris Kirk, Ryan Moore, Webb Simpson, Keegan Bradley, Harris English, Kevin Na. It's the next. That's down to 19, I think it is. So really, so you're saying to me that you would rather pick one of those guys over Tiger and Phil?
No, hey, listen, I feel strongly, very strongly, that Tiger should be on the team. Basically, he's earned it with his reputation, and even though he does have a losing record in the Ryder Cup, I must say I'm slightly taken aback by the position that you're maintaining, that Tiger should be on the team. I mean, to me, I think if Tom Watson hears that Alex Mancelli is behind Tiger being on the team, then there's no more question marks left for Tom Watson. He has to be on the team.
Well, I think, you know, Watson has to look at it pragmatically. He has to look at the fact that if not Tiger, who do you pick? And you have to, he's got to balance this against what he thinks Tiger can do versus what he's doing. His only big concern out of all this is that if Tiger doesn't make the team on points, which he's largely going not to, and if Tiger doesn't make the FedEx Cup playoffs, which is likely he will not, then all of a sudden Tiger's got this window of 4, 5, 6 weeks before he'll play competitive golf. You got Wyndham, you got the 4 weeks of the playoffs, you got the week off, and then you got the Ryder Cup. So that's 6 weeks. So what is Tiger going to do in those 6 weeks to prepare himself to get ready to play in competitive golf? And that's one of the biggest questions that Watson has. And what I find interesting is Watson has said that he's going to talk to Tiger at the U.S. Open. He's going to talk to Tiger at the Open Championship. He hasn't talked to Tiger yet, not by phone, not in person. So he's got very little chances left. He's going to probably have to talk to him at the PGA Championship. And by then, he'll, you know, hopefully they'll have a pretty good idea of where Tiger sits. But, you know, Watson is talking about he wants to pick him. He wants to see form. But he hasn't talked to the guy on the phone yet or talked to him in person. So, you know, there's a lot still to be had. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be Tiger and Phil are going to be the picks if Phil doesn't get in on points. And he's very close. And then it'll be a relative crapshoot of who will be the third pick.
Alex, let me ask you this. Do you think Tiger would serve himself well and really help out Tom Watson by Tiger adding an event? I know he's never played in the Wyndham, but wouldn't that be an indication to Tom Watson that he really wants to be on that Ryder Cup team and you know, he's trying to regain some form?
Well, I don't know if playing Wyndham is going to do that. I mean, I think that by the time Tom Watson leaves the PGA Championship, he's going to know pretty much who his picks are, I would believe. I think what would help more would be if Tiger said, I'm going to go play in a couple events in Europe, or I'm going to go somewhere and play. I'm going to start trying to knock as much rust off of my game as possible. I think that would be more appropriate, because we want him to be playing and being hot going into the Ryder Cup, not playing at Wyndham and then taking 4 weeks off. He's had enough time off. So I think if he was playing in some of the events in Europe or something like that, I think that would be a much more, I mean, more beneficial to Tom Watson and his viewpoint on Tiger Woods than if he went to Wyndham.
All right, we have to move on here, but I do have to ask this question because you even alluded to it. That third pick is shrouded in mystery, and we have no idea. Now, I have heard through the grapevine that you had an opportunity to play with Captain Tom Watson and Keegan Bradley at Glen Eagles. Were you campaigning by any chance to be that pick by Tom Watson to play on the Ryder Cup team? And be honest with your answer.
I don't know who your source is on that, but that's just totally wrong. I was not involved in that at all.
You were not involved in that at all. Well, I apologize. You know, I don't, maybe the first mistake I've made in 3 or 4 years, but hey, if it's a mistake, it's a mistake. There's no mistake that we want your opinion on what you think. Send your opinions to entry@thegrillroom.com. The best opinion will receive, listen to this, a pair of Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. So all you have to do is send us your opinion on should Tiger be on the Ryder Cup team, and we'll read them, review them, and award the winner a pair of Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. Remember, you send your entry into entry@thegrillroom.com. Time now to take a time out. When we come back, we're going to go around the world of golf.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
I was in my lawyer's office the other day. He must be a listener of the Grill Room, believe it or not. He had an old course map on his office wall. He framed it nicely, and it really looked great. And yes, he did buy it at oldcoursemap.com, because that's the only place it can be purchased. It's a beautiful, distinctive map of the old course, new course, and 8 holes of the Jubilee course of St. Andrews. Originally published in 1898. Oldcoursemap.com. See for yourself. It certainly will look great in your office or den. You can go to oldcoursemap.com.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, we're back in the Grill Room. Alex Maselli, Bob Bubka. Around the world, the golf, the PGA Tour, and the RBC Canadian Open. That's what's up first. I have to tell you, Bob, I was driving in Canada from Cabot Links back in Nova Scotia, and I was listening to almost the entire broadcast of the Canadian Open on Sirius XM. And as we started out with Jim Furyk with a pretty good sizable lead, 3-shot lead going in, and then Clark bogeying the first hole and getting a 4-shot lead, all I heard from the announcers were basically all Furyk has to do is just, you know, maintain, don't do anything crazy, should be his. Make the turn, same thing. Then Furyk maintains, but Tim Clark goes on this birdie run. Then all of a sudden they're all like, well, you know, Furyk just hasn't made birdies. He needs to make some birdies. You know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, he did what he was supposed to do with that lead, and he just got caught.
Well, he got caught by an unbelievable performance, Alex. I was watching it, and I said, wow, Tim Clark putting like Alex Maselli now. 10 putts on the back nine to win for the first time since 2010, which is pretty amazing because Jim Furyk has not tasted victory since 2010. So you had two guys that had been out of the winner's circle for quite a long time battling down the stretch. And Jim Furyk must have been saying, holy mackerel, does Tim Clark ever miss a putt? I mean, 10 putts for 9 holes, simply incredible. Hey, I'll tell you what we do now. Let's listen to what Tim Clark said because he's happy about the putter he put in his bag.
You know, I played great all week. Particularly yesterday was a great round of golf. And the front nine today, I was just a little out of sorts. Didn't quite have it with my golf swing or the putter. But making the turn, I was still only 3 back. So I was still in the tournament. And I knew it looked like Jim wasn't going to make any mistakes. He played pretty solid today. So I knew I had to make birdies. And sometimes that can be easier when you know you have to be aggressive. And you know, at that point, nothing to lose. And, you know, I just got hot with the putter on that back nine, obviously. And I went with it.
You know, it's pretty amazing when you watch Tim Clark, Alex. I mean, he plays to his strengths. You know, the par fives, he doesn't try and reach in two because he's really not that long off the tee, but he's a wizard with the wedge. And he just does that. You know, he lays up to the yardage that he feels comfortable with and then certainly made all the putts that he needed to make on that back nine. Very impressive win for Tim Clark, who's been sidelined by injuries and surgeries, his neck, his elbow. But you got to like the guttiness of Tim Clark, Alex.
Well, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the fact that he's only won one time prior to this on the PGA Tour, which was the Players' Championship, is kind of bizarre because he's a very, very good player. But as you said, he's had a lot of different issues. And obviously, you don't go to the long putter if you can putt very well. And so when he had a hot putter this week, it makes the difference. And, you know, you don't hear many guys say, I had a hot 7-wood. You know, I had a hot driver. I mean, the putter is what makes the difference. If you have a hot putter, it makes a mediocre round into a good round and a good round into a great round. And that's what Clark did, used that putter to win his second time. And I think Jim Furyk has to leave now Montreal after having left Hoylake. Hoylake, he probably was pretty excited about the fact that he was playing well and finished second in Open Championship. Now he finishes second again at Montreal, and I don't say he feels as excited as he felt leaving Hoylake. He's probably relatively disappointed, but he's got 2 events left where I think that he'll play very well. Bridgestone, which he kind of basically frittered away to Keegan Bradley, which would have been one of these victories he should have had during this 4-year stretch. And then he'll go to the PGA Championship of Valhalla. Last year had a chance to win the PGA Championship. Jim Furyk, at his age, which I believe is 44, still has a lot of game, and he's going to be on our Ryder Cup team. So it would not surprise me if Jim Furyk won one of the next 2 events.
You think that's starting to play in his head a little bit? I mean, this is the 7th time that he's frittered away, to use an Alex Maselli term, a 54-hole lead. I mean, that you got to start thinking about that. You know, it was 6 times prior to the Canadian Open. He did seem a little tentative with his putts. When you see a player and all their misses on the greens are coming up short, it's easy to speculate that he definitely was a little tentative.
Well, I don't disagree that he would have been a little tentative and maybe a little shaky at times, but here's the thing. He didn't have to do anything. As I said at the beginning, he was basically focusing on getting through there without making any mistakes, which he basically didn't do, and thinking he was going to win the championship by not making mistakes. Now, if Tim Clark doesn't go bonkers on the back nine with his putter, he would have played well enough to have won that golf tournament. And that's what he was trying to do. And I think, you know, and Tim Clark talked about it in his cut there. He had the mindset of going after it and being aggressive. Jim Furyk had never had that mindset because it started at the very beginning of the day where he had makeable birdie putts and didn't make them. And he really never got the putter going because his mind was someplace other than trying to be aggressive.
Well, it certainly proves that, you know, no lead is a safe lead. He began the day, as you pointed out, Alex, leading by 3, bogey by Clark on the first hole. The lead's now 4, but Jim Furyk shoots a 69, which is pretty impressive in itself when you're leading the golf event. And on the fourth and final day, you post a 69. You don't anticipate the Chase man posting that 65. Incredible win by Tim Clark, and our congratulations to him. Speaking of incredible win, Alex, give me your thoughts on Bernhard Langer, who wins by 13, the largest margin of victory in history on the Champions Tour. Hale Irwin had won by 12. Langer replaces that by 13. What did you think when you heard that final result?
Well, I kept following what he did because I thought Royal Porthcawl is a very good golf course. And I told some guys at the Open Championship, if you've never been there, it's a pretty stern test. And so I was always watching what was happening. And what was surprising, it's not the fact that he won by 13 shots. It's to me as much as the numbers he shot when he was there. I mean, it was that is a very, very difficult golf course. And I have to say, do you remember Bernhard Langer being this tremendous links player? Because I don't remember that. And now all of a sudden, he just, you know, just rips up Royal Porthcawl, 13-shot victory over the field, and it wasn't a slouch field. So, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, it was probably one of the most impressive championships and performances I've seen in a long, long time. It's kind of funny because I've had some guys kind of in my ear every once in a while say, you know, McGinley should look at picking Langer. Langer's playing great. McGinley should be talking about picking Langer. I'm like, right, you got Luke Donald, you got Lee Westwood, you're thinking about picking Langer. Well, after this, it's pretty hard not to make the case that Langer is somebody you should be taking a look at.
Well, let's give a listen to what Bernhard Langer had to say on his victory, and then we'll talk about that exact point. Should Paul McGinley be looking hard at Bernhard Langer? Here's Langer.
It means a lot to win any major and to win it on a great golf course like this one, and with a 13-shot lead, this is exceptional. It doesn't happen very often in anybody's professional career, and I'm just very blessed to have been able to play such good golf and really enjoy, you know, the 18 holes today because there wasn't too much pressure. Still had to obviously hit some decent shots and make some putts, but got off to a great start and you know, increased my lead, and it was a real pleasure to be playing the last 10, 12 holes.
All right, let's address that situation that you proposed. Should Paul McGinley take a look at Bernhard Langer?
Well, I mean, yes. It's easy. It's an easy question. Yes, you should look at him because he is a hot golfer. And, you know, when these guys come from the Senior Tour and they move over to the PGA Tour, they move over to the European Tour and they play in events, they play well. I mean, Tom Watson made the cut at Greenbrier, played well. Made the cut at the Open Championship, played well. I wouldn't pick Tom Watson because he's not a hot player, because he's not winning events. On the other hand, you're looking at Bernhard Langer, who's winning events, playing well. When he transitions over to the other tours, he plays well. Do you look at a guy like that? Absolutely. His length is not a question. His ball height, you know, he doesn't hit the ball as high as probably you'd want. But if he's putting well, I mean, let's be honest, Bob. If you're putting well, I mean, really, seriously, if you're putting well and you're playing an alternate shot, you are an asset to a team. You are a tremendous asset to a team. If Bernhard Langer is putting well and blowing away fields, why would you not take a serious look at him?
And I got another reason that I think McGinley ought to give some serious consideration to Bernhard Langer. I'm speculating, but if Bernhard's on the team, how about teaming up with Martin Kaymer? I mean, I think that would be an inspiration to Martin Kaymer, and I think Bernhard Langer would really enjoy the fact playing with a fellow German.
Well, I don't know how that would work. I mean, I know that there were times when you think there were pairings that were great. I remember Bill Rogers and Bruce Litsky back in 1981. The greatest of friends were paired together at Walton Heath, and Dave Marr did that. And they said to Dave, don't pair us together. We don't play well together. We're great friends. We don't play well together. He paired them anyways, and they got blown out. So sometimes those things work, and sometimes they don't. Obviously, that would be a conversation that would have to be had if it was to that situation between Kaymer and Langer. But the bottom line is that if a guy is playing really, really well and is hot, I don't care if he's 55 or 25, you got to take a serious look at him.
All right, one last question. We're, getting close to the deadline for the Ryder Cup picks. Right now, does Paul McGinley pick Bernhard Langer?
No.
Well, you took a little time there, Alex.
Well, I mean, there's so much going on yet. I mean, that's the problem. But the answer is no, because I think that, it's hard. I want to be like Paul. I want to be like Paul Azinger. I want to have as much time as I can before I have to make this pick. And so I'm going to say no, but I reserve the right to change my mind when it's time to pick.
All right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Let's find out from our listeners. We're going to have another contest or an opportunity for our great listeners to win something. Should Bernhard Langer be on the European Ryder Cup team? Send in your entries to entry@thegrillroom.com. The best suggestion or the best thoughts on that matter, you're going to win an Ion Loop bracelet. So it's entry@thegrillroom.com. Should Bernhard Langer be a pick by Paul McGinley? All right, let's move on now to the web.com tour of the Midwest Classic, Overland Park, Kansas. Zach Zuscha records a 3-shot win. He's now fourth on the web.com money list. Played in 17 events this season, Alex. Earned $250,000. I mean, just saying that is incredible. That web.com tour, not only gaining in the quality of its players, but the purse money obviously is escalating.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of has to, doesn't it? I mean, it's just natural for that to happen. The PGA Tour has put more and more focus on the web.com tour by not only getting a great sponsor, but also using it as really the only vehicle to get on the PGA Tour. So, you know, you got to expect that you're going to have some money on these purses to keep these guys be able to play. So it makes all the sense in the world.
All right. Not to take away from the winner, but there was an unbelievable story that was told on the web.com tour with that Midwest Classic. And Alex, that was a play of Jarrett Lyle. And for our listeners not familiar with this name, he battled back from leukemia not only once, but two separate occasions. Jarrett Lyle was suffering from really serious leukemia. He's battled back. He had all four rounds in the 60s. It's just a remarkable story.
Well, you know, to come back is hard from any kind of illness, but to come back twice, and I think Eric Compton could speak to this as well, but there's very few that can really speak to it. And to be able to play at a high level professionally in any sport is just a testament to the will that those people have.
And Jarrett Lyle, on top of being very courageous in his battles, is just an all-round, real nice guy. And we wish him nothing but the best. It looks like he's well on his way to playing the type of golf that he is capable. All right, the LPGA is up next. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the International Crown.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Make Coolbrella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Coolbrella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Coolbrella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to Coolbrella.com. That's Coolbrella.com. Coolbrella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Hi, we're back in The Grill Room. Alex Maselli, Bob Bubka, and we are out of Cave Valley this week. Golf Week's Beth Ann Nichols was on the scene and gave her take on the event. was pretty interesting because it's the first of its kind. It's a biannual global match play competition featuring 8 countries. And I got to tell you, we weren't the one being crowned. We played horrible last week in the international crown. Spain played very, very well. It was kind of an interesting thing, a middle of the season, getting the teams together, different nations playing, and what will be, I'm assuming, down the road, a pretty competitive situation. Beth Ann Baldry, as I said earlier, had a chance to talk to us about what happened there at Kays Valley.
You know, if you look big picture, I think it was a wild success for the LPGA. I mean, I think that Mike Wan has created something that will draw attention to the tour other than a major championship, which is definitely a win-win anytime the LPGA can get eyeballs paying attention to it. I think that's huge. And I think when we look forward down the road, this will be, you know, just a grand slam in Asia, I think, unlike anything we've seen before in Asia, probably.
Did it seem unusual that the final day was contested without the American side being involved?
Absolutely. Saturday, you know, I think was probably one of the best Saturdays, one of the best days I've ever covered on the LPGA. There was so much fun, so much excitement. And then it was like somebody just burst the balloon in the end there, and the realization that, uh-oh, the Americans aren't going to be here on Sunday. And it was just such a deflated feeling. And it was confirmed when I got to the first tee this morning and I counted 30 people in the stands. 30 people. It was like you just sucked the life out of the event in terms of what you saw on the ground, you know, with no U.S. players. It was kind of crazy.
Beth Ann Nichols, who fine work you can read in Golf Week on a weekly basis. Beth Ann, let me ask you this. I'm going to make you Michael Wan right now. And if you could, what changes would you make to the event, if any?
Well, first of all, you know, they definitely will have to pick the teams and the players a lot closer to the date. You know, you needed Michelle Wee there, you know, no question about that. So they need to start the selection process, the cutoff date, somewhere right after the U.S. Open, probably. That's the first change. I would actually like to see captains. You know, we didn't really get any drama out of this, you know, the 4 players with no captains, because they really only had 2 scenarios, you know, 2 different options here for, you know, teams. And then they didn't really give us anything in terms of, you know, any arguments or, you know, problems in the team room. There was none of that. So I think actually it would be great to have these Asian countries to bring out some retired players. It would be great to see, you know, Seiri leading South Korea, you know, in 2018, or, you know, I think that would be, you know, a great add. I know Nancy Lopez really wanted to captain this first U.S. team. She was out there this week. You know, I understand you're trying to be different and create, but we really didn't get the drama that I think they thought they were going to get with only with having 4 players and no captain.
You know, Beth Ann, one more thing. You bring up the captains. It was kind of odd for me watching it on television that, you know, when the U.S. went into the playoff to see if they were going to survive in the Sunday, the number one player in the world, Stacey Lewis, didn't participate.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, it was clear that Lexi Thompson was playing the best golf out of the 4 of them. So that was a no-brainer. Then you have the question of, do you break up Lexi and Christy after they've won 4 points for the U.S. in the last 2 days? Well, Stacey Lewis will tell you that she came off the 18th exhausted. She was tired. You know, they were just kind of drained mentally and felt really deflated after she and Paula Crema lost on the 18th hole. But I think if you had a captain in that situation who came up to Stacey and said, Stacey, I'm putting you in. You're the number one ranked player in the world. The first hole from the playoff is a par 5. Get in there. Get it done. There's no question that she pumps herself up. She walks to that 16th tee box raring to go. But I think if she was in an awkward position to really force herself into anything when you looked at the success that Kerr and Lexi had together those 2 days.
Beth Ann Nichols, thanks for your time and congratulations on a week well done.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, that was Beth Ann Nichols. I call her Beth Ann Baldry because that was her before she was married, it was Baldry. Now that she's married, it's Nichols. I have a hard time. So if you hear me say Beth Ann Baldry, it's really Beth Ann Nichols. I can't get around that, Bob. Maybe you can, but I have a hard time with that.
Well, we just have to, honor the fact that Beth Ann Baldry did get married, and his last name is Nichols. So it is now Beth Ann Nichols, and we'll try our best to refer to her by that name. By the way, she does great work in Golf Week. She covers the LPGA like nobody else. She has keen insight, and we certainly deeply appreciate her contribution to the Grill Room. And, time now, European Tour. David Horsey won the M2M Russian Open. And this is the question I've been waiting to ask you since we started the show and the Grill Room doors opened, Alex. Have you been to Russia?
No, I have not been to Russia. And I really have no desire to be in Russia. And I find it quite interesting that the European Tour was in Russia last week with this whole mess going on in the Ukraine. I'm sure David Horsey was flying, getting on the plane and flying out doing his interview after his win, because I would be there. I wouldn't want to be there 1 second more than I had to be.
I'll say this much on television. The golf course looked tremendous. I mean, there's no way that you could ever even say. I mean, the more I looked at it, I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that they're playing golf in Russia, like you said, with so much tension going on in the world. But, hey, they got it in. David Horsey's the winner, and congrats to him. Hey, let's move on to the future of golf, and that's the kids. The U.S. Girls Junior was won by a 17-year-old Princess Mary Superul, who became the first Filipino-born winner of a USGA championship. She did it in 37 holes at Forest Highlands Golf Club, played in Flagstaff. Pretty impressive win by that young lady.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. When they brought golf to the Olympics, the theory was that they would spread it amongst all the countries, and we'd start seeing golf become more of a global sport than it was. And this is just a prime example of how that's happened.
All right, she's going to play now, Alex, in the U.S. Women's Amateur at Nassau Country Club in Glen Cove, Long Island. Played the golf course many times myself. And matter of fact, that's where the first bet that's commonly referred to now as playing a Nassau originated at the Nassau Country Club. Good luck to her in the U.S. Amateur. On the boys' side of the things, they played at the club at Carlton Woods. That's located in the Woodlands just north of Houston. And by the way, a 17-year-old Texas, Will Zalatoris, defeated Davis Riley 5-3, 36-hole final. Fifth time that he was playing in the U.S. Junior. First played in the U.S. Junior, I can't believe this, when he was 12 years old. He's on his way to Wake Forest. They're going to be mighty happy to get him at Wake Forest.
No, absolutely. It just shows you. I mean, this guy's got, he's got talent, wins or loses, to be in that situation that many times as a kid. It's amazing. And I get here, there's a little FYI here from our producer. This is the sixth different time Texan to win it, win this event since 1999. You know, I understand that our producer lives in Texas, but I don't have to read this Texas stuff, do I?
Well, I'll do it. He also won the Texas Amateur, the Trans Miss, and now has his sights set on the U.S. Amateur next month at the Atlanta Athletic Club, a golf course that you know very well.
Which, by the way, is going to be a pretty wide-open field in Atlanta because of the fact that a lot of guys have turned. Guys that you would have thought that were potential favorites going in are, in fact, playing on the Web.com Tour, the European Tour, or the PGA Tour.
All right, time now for a short break. Then it'll be Focus on Vision. And we'll hear once again from Paul Casey as he talks about wearing his Transitions adaptive sunglasses.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, welcome back to our Focus on Vision segment presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. Bob had a chance to chat with Paul Casey, a Nike athlete who wears the Nike Max Transition sunglasses. So let's listen in.
The name of the game on the PGA Tour is precision, and I'm looking at the Nike Max Transition sunglasses that you're wearing. You're really taking precision to your eyewear.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely spot on. I've been wearing Nike eyewear for quite a while now, and you know, it's something I didn't really pay too much attention to growing up in the UK, where we don't get that much sunshine apart from the summertime. But landing in Arizona and playing in Arizona State, you know, it had to become part of my game. And you know, I'm very lucky that Nike make, you know, as good eyewear as anybody else in the industry, and they you know, they focus on the sportswear stuff, and I think this is a very, very important part of equipment and important for making me play the best golf I can possibly play.
And they really help you not only on the tee, in the fairway, but on the green.
It does, and you know, it's all to do with the lenses, and you know, in fact, the Nike glasses I got on today actually have some Transitions lenses in them, which are superb, because it's always that, you know, we're not playing a sport where the conditions are always the same. And with the Transitions lenses, being able to go in and out of the shadows, you know, the lenses will adapt to the amount of light, you know, being shined down on us. And also the tint on the lenses is very, very important. You know, I actually change a lot of the tints depending on, you know, the light and the colors out here. Do I want the grass to pop a little bit more so I can read the greens a little bit better? Do I want a darker lens just to really relax my eyes so I don't strain too much out here? I can actually get better vision than guys who are not wearing glasses, which is great.
Wow, Paul Casey talking about his Nike Max Transition sunglasses, specifically engineered for the game of golf to soothe and enhance your vision throughout your game.
That's Focus on Vision, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage.
This is the Grill Room. Now here's Alex Maselli and Bob Bubka.
All right, once you hear that music in the background, it means only one thing, and that's news and notes. Alex just loves this segment because, quite frankly, he gets more news and writes more notes than just about anybody. But a good item to start with, Alex, PGA Championship, putting a little fun into the proceedings, a long drive competition to challenge the PGA Championship field during the practice round. And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't in the early 60s Jack Nicklaus win a couple of these long drive contests?
Well, he won one that I know of, and it's the one that he, even to this day, is the proudest of. I mean, he has a money clip that he got for winning back in 63, and that money clip he continues to use even to this day, and it was the reason being is because he never thought he would be able to beat George Bayer in a driving contest, and he did, and he was so excited about it that he continues to use that money clip. And it was interesting because he brought it up at a memorial this year, and you ask him about it, and he kind of explained the whole thing. And obviously, the PGA of America thought it was a good idea to bring this back. I remember writing back coming out of the Masters this year in Golf Week about the fact that we need to bring some of the things they used to do back. They used to have long driving contests, putting contests, closer to the pin contests, and actually the field of the Masters used to come down, and they used to spend time with the patrons and working with them on their golf swings. That was what used to happen back in the Masters back in the 50s. And, you know, I think we forget about the fact that these majors, the four majors, are so important that they're really a celebration as well of golf, and we need to spend more time doing that part of the equation as well outside of the competitive part. And so this is, I'm assuming this is part of that whole idea of bringing it back and kind of getting more people involved in the celebration part of golf.
Alex, I did a little research. You know, in 1963, the year you referenced, Nicklaus, get this now, using a persimmon driver and a wound golf ball, hit a winning drive of 341 yards, 17 inches. Wait a minute. Oh, 17 inches. Okay, a foot and 5 inches, I guess, the same as 17 inches. But 341 yards with a persimmon driver. You got to be kidding me.
Well, he was always long. He just never had a great golf ball. Obviously, he pulled a good golf ball out that day.
Boy, I guess he did. And I wonder what's going to win this year at the PGA Championship. Will it go over 400?
Well, I think it depends on, they're going to use it. I believe they're going to use part of the driving range. And they were still trying to figure out logistics when I had talked to them last. Look, if it's hard and fast and they're using a part of the driving range that's down, more downhill, I mean, can you get to 400 yards? Probably. I mean, Rory McIlroy hit a drive at Royal Aberdeen this year at 425 in a competitive environment. So I don't think there's any question that these guys can hit it, 375, 400 yards in this competition.
Yeah, only once in my career did I win a long drive contest. It was kind of funny. I was playing in a celebrity tournament in New England, as a matter of fact, and they had the long drive contest, and I went down, and they asked me to enter, and I hit a high shot, and I pulled it drastically to the left, and it landed in the back of a dumpster truck that just rode down the road. So they gave me the prize because they said, you just hit a drive probably about 10 miles. So that's a record I'm very proud of. Here's something, though, I want to know from Alex Maselli. Will there be women members of the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of St. Andrews? Is it going to happen, Alex, or is it not?
I think there's no question that it's going to happen, and it will happen before we get the vote. I'm trying to remember if the vote is before Ryder Cup or after.
It's before. It's on the 18th of September.
Then I think when we get there, it will be done.
And, of course, they did make a change. They opened – originally it was just going to be voted on by the members that showed up at the RNA business meeting. And now they're going to have write-in ballots from all 2,400 members. I would think that probably helps the fact that a lady will get in, and I think they definitely should.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that it's going to be a done deal. At the same time, I don't think there's much of a question that the vote for separatism between Scotland and the rest of the UK is going to go down as well, which is on the same day, by the way.
Yeah, I took a casual ballot, met a lot of friends that live in Scotland that were working the Open Championship. Matter of fact, it's the great ladies that worked that huge scoreboard, and everyone was adamant about the fact that they wanted to vote no. They wanted it the way it's been, and from what they're hearing, that they agree with what you said. It's not going to pass. Scotland's going to remain a part of Great Britain. So as one thing stays, another thing goes away. Golf World Magazine goes digital starting this Monday. No longer will they put out a paper magazine, and that's after a run of 67 years.
Well, Condé Nast is the owner. They have done this with other magazines. Most recently that I can remember is Bon Appetit and Gourmet magazine, where Gourmet was just a tremendous, tremendous magazine and was put out to pasture, not even a digital version. They put all their efforts behind Bon Appetit. Thankfully, they're going to keep Golf World magazine as a digital version, at least at this point, with Golf Digest, still being a print version. But, it's sad. It's just the nature of things. It's where we're going. But you hate to see it if you're in this business.
Yeah, absolutely. And lots of great writers, certainly, at Golf World. All right. Rory and G-Mac in the news again. At least their lawyers are. What's happening there?
Well, it's pretty simple. Rory's contention in his case against Horizon Sports is that he was treated similarly to the way Graham McDowell was treated. and he believes that that was not the case, and he wants the records to prove and to show that how Graham McDowell's deals were done were differently than the way that Rory McIlroy's deals were done. And the only way you can do that is by looking at the documents. So the judge in Ireland, in a commercial court in Dublin, ruled that Rory's attorneys would have access to those documents, and which means that basically they'll be part of the public record, I'm assuming. And you'll know everything about every deal that GMAC did.
I'm sure GMAC probably not too happy with that decision. Somebody else probably not too happy. Alex, word has it, Paul McGinley has withdrawn from the PGA Championship. My indications are shoulder injury.
Right. He's had a shoulder problem for a while. I talked to him at Aberdeen Asset Management up in Scotland. He had a problem there. He's had a problem. He had to pull out of the French Open. And he just needs to take some time off and rest it. He will still be in Louisville doing Sky, and also there is a press conference that he'll be involved in because of being Ryder Cup captain as we get closer and closer to the Ryder Cup, but he will not be participating as a competitor.
Too bad for Paul McGinley and that shoulder, and also too bad for the news coming out of Dick's Sporting Goods. They let 500 club pros go, apparently a part of a downsizing initiative by Dick's Sporting Goods.
Well, it's unclear exactly what's going on with Dick's. They're very tied to some manufacturers, and it has been a very difficult year for some of the manufacturers in regards to sales. I think the number is $1 out of every $7 in revenue at Dick's is golf-related. So it's a pretty decent amount of what they bring in on an annual basis. But if you run the numbers pretty quickly and you realize that you got 500 pros and you're paying them X amount of dollars and you run the numbers, you realize that it's a big number they're paying PGA professionals. So they've decided to jettison them. Now, what's unclear is, A, will they hire them back as contractors, or B, you know, what exactly are they going to be doing with their golf business, because they are clearly in the golf business as well as they are in other businesses in sports. So it's one of those things that we don't have an answer for. It's still early in the process, but you know, it's very difficult if you're a PGA professional to find another job in this environment. So it makes it very difficult for those 500 having lost your job.
I know the PGA of America is going to, you know, really try hard assisting those 500 club pros to find another place of employment. When we come back, it'll be what's up next on the schedule. All that coming your way in the Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, powered by Golf Week.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Want to improve your golf game? Improve your vision. Callaway and Transitions Optical have created Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, designed to enhance visual performance while playing golf. They automatically adjust color and darkness, sharpen depth perception, and offer superior clarity. You'll have more accurate distance vision and be better able to see the terrain and contours all day, regardless of weather and light conditions. Buy Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses at CallawayGolf.com or learn where to get a pair in your prescription at transitions.com/sunwear/Neox.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, he's Alex. I'm Bob. And the big event this week on the schedule, well, it's the WGC Bridgestone Invitational for both European Tour and the PGA Tour. 78 players, no cup, Ryder Cup points. Question will be, does Tiger have still enough advantage at Firestone? He's won there 8 times. All the top names are going to be there, Alex. A lot of firepower playing at Bridgestone.
Absolutely a lot of firepower. And I think you're going to find somebody that steps up that we know very well. I don't think there's going to be somebody that's, you know, coming out of the pack. You know, you got Adam Scott there. You got Rory McIlroy. You got Mickelson playing. You got obviously Tiger playing. Keegan Bradley, who's won there in the past. Jim Furyk. From that group alone, I could see a winner.
What about Jordan Spieth? A legitimate shot or not?
Well, I mean, he's always got a legitimate shot, but, you know, and I don't want to undersell this or oversell this, but Jordan Spieth has one win on the PGA Tour, which was at the John Deere. Certainly not an upper-tier event. He's played well in other events, but hasn't won. Bottom line is that Jordan Spieth, to me, even though he's moved up in the world rankings and everything else is said about him, is somewhat in a little bit of a sophomore slump. And can he win here? Sure. But if you're going to ask me if I'm going to bet on him before I bet on Adam Scott or Rory McIlroy or Keegan Bradley or Phil Mickelson, the answer is no.
Well, somebody I might put a wager on, Ricky Fowler. He finished second at the U.S. Open, second at the Open Championship, certainly playing the best golf of his career. And what a switch earlier this year. You and I talked about it many times on the Grow Room, but Ricky Fowler making that phone call to Butch Harmon, asking Butch if he would help him with his game. Butch certainly has worked wonders for young Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, and not only just physically, not only in maybe just fine-tuning or tweaking his swing, but it's more of a mental thing with Butch. Butch has so much in the tank regards to how to play this game, how to be in certain situations, how to react in certain situations. These are the things that are important when you're working with Butch Harmon, and that's what Ricky Fowler has gained and learned over that time with Butch. So there's a lot of great instructors out there, there's no question, but very few have the experiences and the knowledge of what happens inside the ropes that Butch Harmon has, and that's the reason why you see a lot of, you know, Butch Harmon disciples play as well as they did, including, by the way, your guy Tiger Woods, who, you know, and Hank Haney has an argument here, but the bottom line is I don't think Tiger played any better than when he played under the tutelage of Butch Harmon.
Yeah, a lot of factors that go into that, but I certainly would agree. I would think in retrospect, the best move that Tiger could have ever not made would have been to switch coaches, stay with Butch Harmon, who had a marvelous record. He did win a lot, a high percentage rate with Hank Haney, so we can't say that. But Butch Harmon, to me, just over and over proves himself as the best teacher in the game right now. I mean, you know, and the facts speak for themselves.
No, absolutely. There's no question about it. And so we'll see if a Butch Harmon disciple will again win the Bridgestone. I mean, I think, you know, if there's any question on how good Butch has been, just take a look at Brant Snedeker, who was really floundering 30 days ago or so and has spent very little time with Butch, two sessions that I'm aware of, and how he started to get his game turned around and is starting to play better and better. And this is no knock against anybody else. That's not the intent. The intent is that sometimes when you're working with somebody, that what they're saying to you sinks in very easily. And sometimes when you're working with them, no matter how much they tell you, it's like it never even penetrates the eardrum. And I think it can get to that point with players and instructors. And clearly in that case, with Brent Snedeker, that's what happened. And now working with Butch, I think he's starting to see a different viewpoint in a different light, and it's certainly helping him, and I think it just is a testament again to Butch Harmon.
I wonder if Butch Harmon would be up for the ultimate test. Would he take on Alex Maselli as a pupil?
So I already volunteered if I was interested, but I don't think I need that right now. I seem to be playing fine the way it is, so I'm not complaining.
Well, at least you get a status report on a daily basis. Not a lot of people can say that. I mean, when you play every day, you certainly should play well.
That's right, you should. All right, Bobby, that's it for this week. We hope you enjoyed hearing the inside story, The Grill Room. Remember, send opinions to entry@thegrillroom.com. Could Tiger be a captain's pick if he doesn't make it on his own for a chance to win a pair of Callaway Neox Transitions adaptive sunglasses? Or should Paul McGinley seriously consider picking Bernhard Langer for a chance to win an Ion Loop magnetic bracelet?
Next week, we'll be back with all the news about the Bridgestone Invitational, and we'll have a preview of the PGA Championship, Glory's Last Shot. And once again, welcome to our newest partners, Golf Week. Visit them at golfweek.com, the game's leading insider publication. A big thank you to our presenting sponsor, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage. Please visit them on the web at transitions.com/sunwear. Follow us on TuneIn Radio and on Twitter at TGRGolf. And why not like us on the Grow Room Golf Show Facebook page?
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.